decision makers at co-ops to understand the needs of our members. And so we have joining us here today co-op members. And in a second, I'll ask each of them to introduce themselves and kind of give a little bit of their background. Like I said, it's very important for us to understand the needs of our members. And so that's kind of the goal of our exercise here today. I'm going to ask them questions, ask them to respond and share their thoughts on various topics. And I hope that you will listen and really think about what they have to say. Let's see, I'll begin. If you would just kind of share your name, your background, your seat, you know, just in your name, your background, and where you're from.
Okay. My name is Ashley Brown. My first name is Raymond, but since Daddy was named the same thing, they called me Ashley. And when I was a little boy, they show you how much things have changed since I was born. But Ashley was a boy's name. There were no girls named Ashley. So things have changed a lot in my lifetime, so I hope that I can offer something here today that will be beneficial. But when you get as old as I am, it's not likely. I'm from Columbia, Tennessee. I was born and reared there. I worked for Monsanto for a while. And David probably knows this, but the elemental phosphorus plants began here in this area with the research at TDA. It's a big industry now. A lot of people are not aware of that, but this is the birthplace of the Monsanto chemical companies, Shea, Hooker, all those great companies. So anyway, just want to tell you that I'm so glad to be here, and I'm a retired Army colonel and retired chief deputy with the Sheriff's Department in Maury County, which was the greatest job I ever had. I thought it was nothing like the military until I got in law enforcement. I stayed until I was 70 years old, and it was one through the police academy in 59. So I won't go on anymore, but if there are any questions later about some of the experiences I've had in communication, I'd be glad to, and communications, I'll be glad to do that.
And you're a member of Duck River?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Who could follow that? Hi, I'm Taryn Qualls. I'm from the Savannah, Tennessee area. So I guess that would be the Pubic Landing.
Tennessee Valley.
Tennessee Valley, sorry. What I do, I'm a local business owner in the area, or helping start a local business in the area. We have been around for about 2 years now, but we're an online marketing and social media management company. So we do fun stuff on Facebook and Twitter and all that. But that's all I
have. Hi, my name is Ryan I. Smith. I'm from Henderson, Tennessee. I teach finance at Fred Hardeman University. I got three boys. We built a house about 2.5 years ago there in Henderson, and I'm a member of the Southwest Tennessee Electric Co-op.
My name is Wendy Abbott, and I'm from South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. I'm a member of the Sequatchie Valley Electric Co-op. I have two teenage boys, one that just turned 18. I've been home for the past 15 years and just started back to work, so I really don't know much about nothing. And Trent told me I could pass if I wanted to, so. But thank you for inviting me for being here.
Can y'all hear me without the mic? Okay. That might help facilitate things a little better. So today, as we said, we're asking for your honest feedback. We're not going to try and put you on the spot. We're not going to ask you any gotcha questions. If you don't know the answer to something, say, I don't know. That's not your fault. That's our fault as communicators that we haven't educated you. So feel free to say I don't know or don't know, have enough information to have an opinion. So we've got some questions here that have been submitted. I'll go through those. At the end, we're going to save a few minutes for questions from you guys. So be thinking about what you would like to hear from our members who, as you might notice, are from all different ages, all different backgrounds, and all different parts of the state. I think it will be interesting to hear as they respond to questions how that might affect their answers and some of their preferences. So As we get started, I'll ask a very simple question. You all are received your power from an electric co-op, so do you consider yourself a customer or a member of your electric co-op?
Are we going to use this the whole time?
Yeah, let's pass it around.
Customer?
Well, I would think both. I'm back.
Probably a little bit of a customer, yeah.
Customer and member, I think you're both, maybe we receive the product, so that's the way I consider myself.
Why do you say customer?
Well, I use your power. I use your resources.
Okay.
And so I pay a monthly bill. So it makes you a customer. But I realize that it's much bigger than that because you have all these people that work together to try to come up with a common good and a common product that people need that you can give to them as efficiently and economically as you can. So I consider that a fellowship, too. Together with a group.
So co-ops are unique. Unlike many other utilities, we are owned by the people that we serve. So you as consumers of electricity provided by a co-op, you are indeed a member of that co-op and an owner, in fact. And so my follow-up question would be, how does that change your perception of the utility? If you know that you are an owner, you are a member of that utility, does that change how you view the utility more so than just being a customer?
Well, you want it to do well.
Could you hear the mic?
You want it to do well if it's part of you and you're a member of it. So you're going to be, I don't know, you're going to want it to do well in that area.
I said customer, but I think that if you stress the membership part more, I think then you feel like you're not just buying something, but maybe you're getting the best rate if the membership part of it is stressed.
Yeah, I agree. I think the education of the membership over the customer kind of aspect is very important. Also, I think that being able to kind of explain that you have a partial ownership over what you're taking from the Cincy Valley or wherever is very important as far as helping people understand that their voice is important in helping the situation improve or become better in their area.
I think I told you, I mentioned to you, and I'm sure you don't know this, but I've been here a long time. I was probably here literally when President Roosevelt had that picture made. Probably already born in 1938. Could have been a little before that. I've seen a lot of change. TVA birthed in this area. And I'm telling you, the political and personal impact that it had on the South, and especially this area here, was overwhelming. It was like a cult to be from the South and be a part of TVA. And it wasn't a family thing, even though it was owned and run by the government, but we felt like family. When anyone attacked it, you're probably aware of this, we voted against them. So the products that come, I'm sure, from this corporation come from TVA, and you will get benefits when you assimilate all people together and work together, and the synergies of it will cause an effect that's so much more positive than when we pull apart. And that's literally true on everything, but TVA was a great resource here, and I think that Duck River Electric is too.
Related question, as a co-op member, each co-op has a requirement in its bylaws to have an annual meeting of the membership. And so, by show of hands, would you tell me if you've ever been to your co-op's annual meeting? I did not ask ahead of time.
I think I would if Claire would remind me.
She's
my child, really.
I actually suspected as much. It's a very important part of our process to to have a meeting of the membership. We're required to do it by law, but it's also important for us to have our members engaged and to ask questions and be informed. And so, since none of you have ever gone to your local co-op's annual meeting, what could we do as co-ops to encourage you to do that? I know you have many things to do. Many of you have families and children, and time is precious. So, what can we do to influence that, to encourage you to come and be a part of that process? Many times we...
I don't want to dominate this, please. But, you know, I think a personal contact with people, calling, having members of the board and others that have friends, to call and invite them on a personal basis, hey, as you come to this meeting, be with us a little while. Can you stay okay? Stay a little while. And then when they come, recognize them as members. And but a personal contact, as everyone knows, is the best. And it would just kind of go out from the board, individual members, and ask them to invite someone that's also a member. And you might get a pretty good response.
This is going to be kind of like a marketing question, or not question, but answer for me. But shorten the mic. I'm kind of coming at it with, for me, like, I just didn't know that the meetings even existed for me, just because I'm, you know, 25, moved back to the area, started a business, but I don't really think I've ever received anything in the mail. Maybe I maybe have, you know, but I think marketing is really important for educating and for letting people know what's going on. And I think in today's age, especially my age group, like, we stay online and on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of marketing is, like, exponentially more important to get to people to know what's going on in the local area. So I think that's very important. Here you go.
For me, I think it's lack of awareness. And I'm not sure what the benefit would be if I did go. And if it came in my bill envelope, almost certainly did not look at it because I was just looking at my bill and moving on from there.
I'm not the meeting person in my family. My husband is. And I'm sure he's been to quite a few. And I think there is like a newsletter that comes in our bill that does tell that. As soon as I get it, I pay the bill and then I hand him the meeting letter. So that's why I've never, you know, it would be something like, if I was reminded, I probably would go. But normally, I think it is in the newsletter that we get with our billing.
I am shocked that no one said free hot dogs.
Well, that would encourage one, I'll tell you.
I really expected somebody to say the free hot dogs.
There's a lady back there that has a question, Trent.
You need to bring in the mic.
She was asking if you follow your local co-op on social media.
I do not. I wasn't aware they even have them, you know. So for me, it's more of a just a kind of letting people know that even kind of thing exists. So just like for in our local area, we have like Lifespan Health, which is a medical healthcare facility. And we always, on all of their marketing, make sure that there's any type of, if there's a URL, social media icon, something, that way they know, hey, we do marketing, general marketing for like billboards and posters and stuff, but we also do other marketing that's online, so for a URL or a Facebook link or whatever. But for me, like, I just didn't know. And so, I mean, for me, it's like knowing is half the battle, which is the hardest part of the battle. But yeah, after I know, I would obviously like them, yeah.
I find it interesting that in the annual meeting question, what could we get you to do to come, that Mr. Ashley says, a personal contact, and Terrence says, tell me on Facebook. And so clearly there's no silver bullet here.
Seems to be an age gap there.
We have gotten it on email, though, because, not make sense, because I've gotten it from, I don't know where specialists send it or what, but I attended a great display of things that I was not aware of recently through meeting there in Columbia. And I'm telling you, that was really fun to see those guys work with that electricity and demonstrate the dangers of it and how you could get killed and how you... I didn't know that. I've been around that kind of stuff all my life and to some degree, and I didn't know it was that. Monsanto, where I worked for a little while, had tremendous amounts of electricity coming into it from TVA. I think more so, a third more than the whole city of Memphis used went into that plant that I worked at. So what I'm saying, you know, I learned a great deal out there. It kept me entertained the whole time I was there.
Terry tells me he's referring to a member appreciation event that y'all had in each.
But I received an email, I believe. Okay.
Kind of related to the annual meeting question, co-ops are governed and policies and procedures are set by a board of directors. The board is elected from among the membership by the membership. And so the elections take place each year. Many times they are at the local co-op's office, or they are at the annual meeting, or they, in some cases, are by mail. So have any of you voted in a co-op director's election before? Okay. Similar question. What can we do to encourage you to be active in that process? Is it simply education to let you know more about it, or is it that it's difficult to go to the office? Perhaps, you know, having it by mail would make it easier to do it. What can we do to encourage participation in the director's election?
I don't even know how you would go about trying to get on a ballot. And so since I don't know how somebody actually gets on the ballot, I don't know why I need to vote on it. Necessarily, I don't understand any of the process. Maybe knowing more about that could cue me in that I need to be more vocal in the vote.
I only say this, you know, most of you have a few investments. You get an invitation to vote for the board members and things by proxy. And a lot of times I don't know who with it this time, but you have the opportunity. So it does educate you to a degree. Here are the people that are running. Here are the people that maybe have offered themselves. And here we recommend as the board to continue to be members here. And the board step out occasionally and do that. I also belong to several associations that do the same thing. So I don't know where that would help anything. I think the personal contact is, you know, I hate to try to vote for people I don't even know who they are that's going to invest my money. But I did it at times because I take the recommendation of the board. So I don't know whether that would be beneficial. It would certainly be very costly to mail that kind of mailing. But if you could do it by social media and personally invite people, I'd make it more of a personal thing in the long run, because certainly this Duck River Electric Association of people and owners, as you say, I think that you could get people to come. I really do. And off from a hot dog if you want to, I think that helps too.
Kind of changing gears a little bit, our co-ops offer several ways to pay your bill. So just kind of a simple question, how do you pay your bill?
Well, since I retired, my wife does it. Believe it or not, I always paid the bills totally. My generation of men took care of your family. And whatever, my wife has retired from Social Security construction. She had a very good job. She had a very good pension. But I pay the bills, my own bills, and I pay for everything that has to do with that family. And that's first. Whatever she does with her money or wants to do on vacations or help with investments, that's great. Now, since I've retired, you know, I have gotten away from paying those bills unless she's sick or something like that. But we pay them both ways, by automation. This is, automation, deducting, and I have some things that are set up that the bank takes out automatically every month. My power statement from one of my places that comes from, I guess, County Power and Water. But I pay by check a lot, and pay by all the different ways. The easiest way, of course, pull it up on your computer. My wife has a Mac Air I bought for her, and she does everything on that Mac Air. So we just use everything.
Karen, how do you pay your
bill? If it's not online, it's usually just going to the local area and then running a check or a card, using a card, and then placing it. So.
I always just go by the office and drop it off on the way to work.
Well, I've always been an old school person. I was worked at a bank for like 20 years, and I always liked writing checks. I wanted the paper, and I put them in the mail. But about 6 months ago, I did go online and started doing mine online. And it's awesome. As my son likes to tell me, technology is awesome, Mom.
Y'all can see what happened there? Because, don't let me offend you, but
no,
our younger members come to the office and pay their bill in the office, and our other members pay online. Not what I would have expected.
Well, most of the time I do try to pay online, but sometimes me and the other person paying on the X can we like to bring it in and make sure that everything's accurate and all that kind of stuff. So we just like doing that, but we're more careful, I would say. but most of the time if we don't pay it in the office, we pay it online. So,
Does your co-op, if you do pay online, do you know offhand if your co-op charges a convenience fee to pay an added charge to pay online? Some co-ops do.
We pay co-op online, by check.
I believe they do, yeah.
Okay. I think they do.
I don't think there's a charge.
Okay. Does that sway your decision to do that? If you went online to pay your bill and you saw that there's $3.50, $4 fee to pay online, would that make you, well, I'm going to send them a check instead?
Not me, now my husband, who is a banker still. Yeah, that $3 would probably get him. But I'm the one that pays the bill, so I'm living, I have $3, okay.
For $3, I probably would go by the office still instead of doing it online.
I think the convenience of online probably outweighs the $3 fee of the bank for me.
Again, changing gears, moving to a different topic. Co-ops work very hard to keep the lights on, but despite our best efforts, because of storms or traffic accidents or whatever, power sometimes goes off. So when that happens, if you call in many times, our co-ops kind of struggle with an issue, and I'd like to hear your feedback on this. Our engineers, which we may have a few in the audience, they tend to say that it's very hard for us to know exactly when the power is going to come back on until we get out on scene and see what's going on. And even after we're on scene, sometimes we don't know exactly what all has happened. And so providing an estimate of what time the power is going to be back on, is it going to be 2 hours or 4 hours or 15 minutes, whatever, many times our co-ops simply don't do that because we don't know. And so the honest answer is, we can't tell you exactly when your lights are coming back on. So would you prefer the honest answer of, we don't know, to our best guess? Our best guess could be, it's going to be 2 hours. There's a very good chance that you're wrong. So what would you prefer? Would you prefer the honest answer of, we don't know, or would you prefer our best guess, even if it's wrong?
Well, Saturday afternoon when my power went out, we were getting ready for supper, and the power went out, and we went, my parents live in town, so we just drove into town, the whole 10-minute drive into town, went to town and ate dinner and just waited and hoped that it would be back on when we finished dinner and came back. We just stayed around for several hours just waiting because we didn't know. I called immediately when the power went out and got the, our people are working on this kind of automated message. And I would rather have something like, it's going to be at least 3 hours. I don't care if that means it's going to be 4 more days after that. But like as far as saying it's going to be at least this window of time before we can even respond, like some minimum would be helpful.
This has happened kind of in our office, and we work on computers and on the internet. That's all we do. So when the power goes out, we basically go home. So there was a time where the power went out. I think it was for about 3 hours ish. And for me, I like having at least a general estimate of when it would be coming back on, because at that point, that's when we're having to make the decision of sending people home, saying like you have to go home, or if you have a laptop, hey, just work from the house or work from a a local coffee shop or something like that. So I think an estimate would be best.
I actually work for a media cable internet company, and we have outage problems. So I think I'm more patient with that. I had rather them say, I really don't know. We're on it. As long as I know they're on it and they know that it's about, they're aware of it, I'm good with that. So I'm kind of more patient because people do get really ugly sometimes. So.
I always know it's going to come back on, so I don't ever call anyone. It's just it's going to come back on. You're not going to let it by calling. There is a point to it, though. If you call and someone else hasn't called, then they will know it then. But I'm going to call, and it really bothers me. I do just like you do. I get in the car and go load my wife up, and we go somewhere. So kill a little time, maybe have lunch or dinner or whatever, and come back. In the military, of course, we had backup on everything. I mean, everything was backed up. You had gigantic, and then we still do generators that back up anything, all your stuff. So I never faced anything in there ever that was a problem as far as having electricity.
Another thing that we often balance is when the power goes out, in many cases, if it's a large outage, if there's been an ice storm or something, there's only so many people that we would have go off at any given time. And so what would be your preference? Would your preference be the automated system where any of our co-ops might have 20 telephone lines coming in and the automated system can answer absolutely every one of them, but it's not a human being. It's a system that that recognizes your phone number and says, okay, we know you're out. It's been reported. Our people are working on it. Would you prefer a system like that, an automated system without a human being, to getting to talk to a live person, but the cost of talking to a live person will very likely be busy signals and having to wait and difficulty getting through. So what would be your preference, an automated system or a live person with the cost of having to get busy signals and maybe not get through immediately?
When I called the number on Saturday and got that message, you know, there's a power outage in your area, obviously the system recognized my phone number, but if it could just specify more, there is a power outage in Henderson, there's a power outage in the Beach Bluff area, or because every time I call and get that response, I don't know if they're really meaning in my area or like a big my area. So I just don't know. I don't know if they actually recognize me specifically.
As far as there being outages, I'm good with an automated system. As far as I know that they're, it's not a huge area, but as long as I know they're on it and they know something's going on, the difference is with a billing question. If I have a question about a bill, I'd rather talk to a live person. So, but as far as an outage, as long as I know they're on it and they're aware of it, the automated is good with me.
Yeah, I think Ryan. I think what Ryan said, I'm going to echo. That's a great idea. Make sure that when the automated message does go out, it's a more specific to the area type message. That's I think it's fine.
Well, I'm not working now, so I don't have any real crises come up. So they were able to direct their, you know, to this topic, and I'll just push. Every time I've gone to that office out there, and I think I've been there three times, in Columbia, they take care of me right then. I have never had a problem. And I may have called them twice in all these years. So the service there is phenomenal to me.
Again, changing gears a little bit. We use a lot of different tools to communicate with our members, to educate our members. How many of you received the Tennessee Magazine? Okay. Do you know who sends you the magazine? Where does it come from?
Okay. I received two or three like that.
Were the rest of you aware of where the magazine came from?
I was.
What other tools would you like to see co-ops use to we talked earlier about the annual meeting and how you would like to be informed of the annual meeting. We talked about outages and how you might like to be informed about outages. And there's other information that we share with our members, whether it's safety or energy efficiency. That sort of information, how would you like to hear from your co-op? What tools would you like to see the co-op use to communicate with you?
I'm more or less content with the current level of service and offerings and tools.
I am too, and I think that says a lot. We were talking about customer service, and any time I've ever had to go to the office or call for anything, they take care of it. They're on it. So I'm more patient when we do have an outage. I'm going to be more patient about it. I don't really see anything. They pretty much do. I don't see anything else really that could be done on that end of it, other than the meetings now. And like I say, those are in, I'm sure those are in the flyer, right? And I hand them off, so.
No offense to the media industry or anything,
yeah,
but the electric company is significantly easier to work with than, you know, talking about dealing with phones or cable or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much content. I think that you guys are doing a great job. I mean, just for me, it's like I just needed to know where the information was coming from. Just like we had talked about, you guys had a social media presence, I didn't even know. And I obviously like, you know, Facebook, email, phone call, anything like that. I think that's always important. And, you know, it comes, of course, with the bill itself. So I just need to pay more attention. That's probably my problem.
You're a fan of
Changing gears again, moving on to another topic. All of the electric co-ops in Tennessee buy their wholesale energy from the Tennessee Valley Authority, which we've talked about a little bit. So just where do you think TVA, what source do they use to generate a majority of their power? Is it hydroelectric like Wilson Dam? Is it nuclear? Is it coal? Just anecdotally, what do you think TVA uses the most to generate power? Where does the most of your power come from?
The water?
I'd say coal.
So we've got coal, we've got hydro.
Hydro.
Okay. What's the current mix? It's about less than 10% hydro. Is that right? Roughly?
There you go.
So, which TVA has a long history of hydro energy, and so that's a very common thought. A majority of our power does still come. Nuclear is used quite a bit. Coal is still a large part of the generation mix. So on a during periods of high demand, so think hot summer afternoon or frigidly cold winter morning, TVA uses their least expensive sources as a whole. So on a day like today when it's not incredibly hot, they're generating most of their power through some of their cheapest sources. When it gets colder and the requirements for power are more, or it gets hotter in the summer, the requirements for power are more, and so they have to start turning on different sources of generation. Those tend to be more expensive sources. And so what that means is during a period of high demand, so again, a hot summer afternoon or a very cold winter morning, the electricity that is being generated is more expensive. And so I want to ask a couple questions about kind of how, well, let me back up. Would you respond if your co-op said, hey, this is a period of high demand, energy is more expensive right now, would you respond to a request from your utility to try to be careful about what you use? Turn your thermostat up, don't dry a load of clothes right now. Would you respond to a request like that if you got no immediate feedback? Does that make sense? So we're not paying you to change your behavior. We're not doing anything like that. It's just a simple request. For the good of the whole, would you change your activities. Would you do that?
There would be some things that I'd be willing to put off by just the whole, you know, common good plea, but if there was some cost benefit, there'd be a whole lot of things that I would change.
Well, I'm the one that washes and dries and hot flash. I would say, look, I will, but I'd have to, whatever it costs. I mean, you know, if there was money, if it saved money, then sure. But I'm just trying to be honest. I mean, you know, I use the dryer continually, all the time. And we rarely use heat where we live. I mean, we don't use a lot of heat. But air conditioning, yes.
A related question. Many of our co-ops have something called a load control program. So a program like that would allow, they have technology where they could temporarily shut off your water heater for 15, 20, 30 minutes. In most cases, you wouldn't know that that happened. Or they might temporarily change your thermostat setting. In a hot summer day, they might bump it up to 75 degrees temporarily. And for members who participate in a program like that, there are incentives usually associated with allowing them to control those appliances in your home. Back to kind of the original question, if there were incentives involved, would you allow your local utility to have that sort of control over appliances in your home? And would it have to be a small incentive, or what dollar value a month do you think it would take you to allow your local utility to do something like that?
Yes, and like at least 10% discount.
The thing about, and I guess most people, from like 8 to 8 o'clock, there's nobody at our house anyway. So when we leave, we it wouldn't affect us depending on when it was. Now when I get home, I want my air conditioning now. So, but that would be, I could deal with that.
Could the, I'm just kind of thinking about it, like sectioning it off, could the different times or the flexibility of how you guys can control it on your end, could that be adjusted from our end as far as like, hey, we want it to be, if it needs, if your average is saying, okay, well, we want to bump you up to 75, and I'm going to say, well, I actually don't want it to go higher than 73. Would that be something possible?
So in most cases, there is an override feature. So
okay.
If you're having a lot of people over at your home, and you don't want your thermostat to be at 75, you can hit a button and override it. So
gotcha.
You always have the ability to say, not right now.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. I think like a flex record to that would be really cool. I'm not sure as far as like the incentive, like 5-10%. You could say, I think that once you guys could, you know, crunch numbers and say, hey, you saved such and such on this because of this program, that would be great. Yeah.
I really concur with that last statement because theoretically you're going to save power when you have this device installed. So it has economics to it, kind of benefits. I was in the military, and you know, we used a lot of fossil fuel and we used a lot of electricity. But in the 70s, I was executive officer of a combat battalion, and we had that real impact come in. And I like to froze everybody to death there. I said, put on a coat, put on a sweater, we've got this bag. I think it was during President Carter's administration, if I remember right. We had a real crisis. And I like to froze some of the older people. That time I was younger, whether you believe it or not. And we had it was a serious thing on our part. Now, when I left home, I just cut all my stuff off. And when I go back home, I'll cut it back on. Now, I like a cool room at night, but I can adjust if I have to. And when I talk about cool, I'm talking about 60, 62 degrees at night. I get that air conditioner down. I don't care how often I have to replace those heat pumps. But they last 15, 20 years. My heat pump lasts. I don't know what people have a problem with them because I never had one to wear out. And but now I can adjust. And I don't feel that I'm being opposed on if it's necessary to adjust, to adjust.
A related question, like I said, not all energy is created equal, and sometimes it's more expensive than at other times. And utilities are considering rates that would reflect that. So there would be an on-peak rate and an off-peak rate. And so in the summer, that would be in the afternoon, it would be on-peak. In the winter, that would be a very cold part of the early morning. So just in general, how do you feel about the rates that that reflect the actual cost of energy, even if it means that sometimes during the day you might have to pay more?
I think as long as you can show it on the billing, like when we get our bill and you say, okay, during this time, or this is how much you saved, that's what people are going to be looking for. Oh, I saved this during that time.
The goal of something like this would be to encourage you to change your behavior. So instead of drying a load of clothes at 3 in the afternoon in July, would you consider drying your load of clothes at midnight? Or later at night, uh-huh. Early in the morning. would rates that kind of reflected the actual cost of energy, would that encourage you to change your behavior, or would you just continue to do what you've always done?
It would change my habits. The concern from the customer member standpoint now is that I think that when you have peak and off-peak things, the peak begins to creep and widen and widen, and the provider, whether it's a hotel or flights or whatever, like to make that peak just get real big. And so I would be nervous about that if we sort of go down that road.
I'm just going to kind of relate this to something that I have friends that use in San Francisco, Uber, which is they do things called flex rates, which are during peak hours of like traffic. So if you're trying to get from point A to point B, the regular rate on off-peak hours, so like at 8 at night or whatever, could be only $12 or whatever. But during peak hours, you could easily rise up to $20, $30. I think that's great from the business perspective. I think from a like consumer, customer, member perspective, it may end up biting us a little bit and forcing us to change our habits, which I think overall is a good thing. But I think making sure that the message for that needs to be as clear and concise as possible. That way people don't get upset, like, I want to wash my laundry or whatever, or dry my clothes at this time, and then they can't, because, or they do it anyway, but then they see their giant bill later.
Corny as this is, I come from a generation where I think patriotism overrode monetary consideration. I know that's hard for a lot of y'all to maybe understand today, but you struggle probably harder than we did. And we were not used to having much. We just didn't have it. During World War II, everything was rationed. You know, you just didn't have it. You didn't have meat. You didn't have a lot of the things you just take for granted now. I remember the first Hershey bar I ever saw, I was probably 7 years old. So the point I'm trying to make is, money now, in my time of life, in my situation, is not a concern for me. What my concern is, and that doesn't mean to be bragging or being a smart aleck, I'm just telling you it's not a concern that I have. What I would do without it, even though I could afford it, if it would benefit my country. Whatever is good for the common good is important to me at my age, more so than monetary consideration. And that's just what it is. I love this country, and I love what it's done for other countries that want to badmouth us today. That makes me so ill, I can't understand it. So I'm not here to lecture you on patriotism or anything, but yes, I would cut back and do whatever I had to do. And I know that climate change is a big political boondoggle right now. I don't know what part of it is true and not true. I'm not that smart. But you know, I can go on about this. I don't mean to do that. Saving our rivers and things of that nature are important to me. But shutting down our economy to do it is not that important to me. We've got to make a living in this country, and we can't let the people that don't have to worry about things like this make these decisions. It's the people that have to deal with this that needs to be making these decisions.
I agree. I think there needs to be a balance struck between environmentally friendly and economically sound. I think this is going to be your constant battle throughout to make sure that you're making money while also not destroying our environment. So I think striking a fair balance between those two is the most important thing.
I agree with this. Yeah.
Another issue that co-ops have been active from a legislative standpoint is broadband. There is a law in the state of Tennessee that prevents electric utilities, electric co-ops, from providing retail broadband service. When you look at the maps of Tennessee and our most underserved areas where high-speed internet is not available in many cases, that's where the co-ops serve. And so that's an important issue for us. Just in general, how many of you have access to high-speed internet at your home? Ryan, did you know? Okay. Do you feel like it's important for electric co-ops to be involved in that conversation and be involved in that space, or should we stay and continue to do electricity and nothing else?
Well, being the only one without broadband at the house, you know, we literally just have, you know, a smartphone, and that's all that we have. I think that there's economies of scale with co-ops being able to bring, with using existing lines and things, broadband to rural areas especially.
We really didn't have any of that until my boys got up into high school. And we had to, because a lot of school, they had to have it. There's a conflict there with me because I work for a media. We do cable, we do internet, we're a small company, and of course that would shut us down. But on the other hand, we do need the high speed. We do need somebody that can come in and I understand that. I see that. And I don't know if North Alabama, I know that there's a lot of people that they're saying, you know, they're going to come in, they're going to start doing that. As far as homes having it, I think they're going to have it. I mean, we can't function without it at our house. We have to have it. So, and a lot of the kids, a lot of schooling, homework, everything. I mean, you know, you only make so many trips to the library and then go, okay, I'm going to do it, you know. So, yeah, to me that would be awesome.
Just in general, like I said, co-ops are active in Nashville and in D.C., and in many cases that means we spend money on lobbying activities. So as a co-op member, how do you feel about your co-op being involved in that process? Does that make you a little uncomfortable, or do you understand that that's part of the business? What are your thoughts on that?
I've got no discomfort there.
I think lobbying, for the most part, is just part of the process. Just kind of the necessary evil of it all. I agree. I think having you guys just as a source or a third option in an otherwise monopolized area for broadband coverage would be fantastic. So,
after leaving command, I got into information systems and was on the front end of that in the military. I mean, I bought some of the first computers that was ever bought. Chaired the council at the Pentagon on information systems for the Army. So I understand a great deal about how important it is. My little phone is my source of everything. I constantly am researching things and even movies, but and everything is on this phone if you ask the right question. And today to deny that to anyone is kind of ridiculous, because they need that information and they need to know how to use this technology. And if it grew up like that did, it was a real struggle to reprogram my old head. And I can't do without it now. You know, I'd be frightened. It's my doc. I get access to my doctors. I get access to my medical information. I get access to my retirement pay. I mean, everything is on my computer. So to deny that to people when there's an opportunity to provide it, I would say, well, see, why? Why not? I don't mean anything what I just said, but I think everyone should have the access. They may not want it, but they need the access.
I've got some questions left, but I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say. So in the time we've got remaining, do any of you have questions for our real live co-op members here on stage? Seth?
Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate all the information. I'm curious, have you, and it doesn't necessarily have to be recent or your current electric company, but do any of you have any memories of an electric company giving you an impression on good or bad? And preferably not how you were looking. I know that's probably the first big thing that comes to mind, but scholarship for a kid, solid youth program, article, advertising on TV.
So Seth's question, if you couldn't hear him, was he asked them to share an experience where they that something that the co-op did had an impact on them, or something that was memorable that the co-op did.
Or you noticed.
That you noticed, right.
I remember scholarship opportunities for people whenever I was in high school. Is it the essay contest? Yeah, I didn't write the essay, sorry. But I remember my classmates getting that. But throughout the no outage story, but I think the most significant impacts have been when people from my local co-op came and did things at my house. You know, when I felt like it was almost an imposition on their time, I really appreciated that. And that's why I think we generally all have very good feelings towards our electric providers.
Well, I do. My son he's getting to go to Washington this year, so that's something. But now, that's all we know is Sequoia Valley Electric. So, I mean, they're just a big, that's our community, pretty much, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think you guys do a great job. And with the Tennessee Valley area, I mean, anytime there's ever been a power outage or anything like that, anytime they've actually come to a place for us, I think it's never any kind of a hassle. No one's ever rude. They're always really polite. They get to it and they're out, you know. I think they're great.
I don't know anything specific about the co-ops, but TVA had such an impact on our community, and I'm sure it's no different with your co-op. When I was a young man, I also tried to renovate my high school when they abandoned the building and tried to keep it, and TVA came and did a tremendous study of what it cost. And they also gave me money to stabilize the old building. So, I mean, you know, TVA has a very, very, very tender place in most Southerners' hearts, and certainly for my generation. And, of course, the co-ops are all shoots of TVA, so I'm sure that y'all are very, very good. I'm just not aware of any specific program right now.
Just for clarification, the prepaid service, whenever the person that I talked to, she kind of related to like a cell phone plan, similar. Is that close or okay? Right.
It's like buying a tank of gas. You have a credit at the co-op. co-op, as you use energy, it draws that credit down, and when you get to a certain level, you're notified that, hey, you need to make another payment to the co-op.
Play three video games, you gotta
cut
it out. I think that's a good idea overall. I think educating people on what it actually is and what it's doing and how much people are actually spending on a monthly basis is really great. I think making sure people know that, hey, you're actually under the standard of what you're going to be paying anyway, you know, or whatever, or make sure that they know when they bump up against that standard that they can be notified immediately.
So would you consider switching?
I would personally, yes. I think on renewable energy, once the cost of creating the renewable energy outweighed by the gain by it, I think that's obviously the way to go. I think as far as solar power energy like that, if it's something where it's like by the next 5 or 10 years it would pay for itself and then continually on, I think that's a great idea. I think it's an investment towards the future for the area as well as for environmental and economic stability. So I think that's great, myself.
I don't want to bore you, but you know, with renewable energy, some of these devices now, these panels and everything, are extremely expensive, and it takes just years and years to get them recovered. It's like the Prius automobile, you know, it takes like 10 years to recover the initial cost of the advance of the increased cost of the vehicle, as I understand it. I went out west, my wife and I did in 2007. We drove all the way to Santa Fe, New Mexico for a birthday party for a friend. And on the way out there, I saw these terrible looking windmills. How many people have seen those? Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? Unless it's in my backyard. All these people up there, the Kennedys were very much for this, and Massachusetts, they tried to put some out there in Martha Vineyards here, out in the ocean. You remember hearing that? These things are not pretty. They have an environmental impact that goes the other way that needs to be considered also. So the only thing I'm saying is I think all of us are interested in trying to use the resources and conserve resources of all types. If you're a good person, you're going to want to do that. I've got an opinion on them reusing all these shopping centers that we vacate and go to another one and leave that tremendous eyesore there. That's environmental contamination. We never talk about those things. So basically what I'm saying is some of these things are good unless they're in my backyard, and then I'm not for that. And I don't like these great big windmills. And I don't think the people out west that have them, now that they've gotten them, like them either. So we're going to have to be careful about how we impose on one to get some idealistic notion satisfied. And I hope I'm not talking too much up here, but I am.
I think we got a question in the back.
The question I have is the communication part of everything. When you're asked the question, it's like if we knew about this. The challenge is, would it be through a magazine? Would it be through the board member reaching out and calling you? Would it be through a social media aspect? Would it be, you know, how? That is the challenge, because as a member of a cooperative, did you realize that you could actually be on that poll? Each one of you, run for that board. Did you know that? I'm going to say you didn't. Now tell me,
I did not.
Did you play an active role? Because it's so hard to communicate all these things, and with your time, how in the world and what can we do as a community to get you more involved? And that's what everybody that's in this room wants to do. We do different communities, programs and everything, but in your opinion, I'd like to hear from each one of you,
It might be. I think that I have a very good relationship with, I mean, people from the lineman to the lady that cashes my check when I come in. And so I think using those relationships to maybe say, have you thought about running for the board? Do you know what the board does? I think that's probably going to be your best ticket to actually empowering people to go out and do something, because we regularly read the Tennessee magazine that comes out and look at that. But I think that using those relationships from a grassroots effort would be the most effective means.
I think it depends on what generation you're wanting to do that, because you've got people who, I am on Facebook, and I see things that come up if there's a planned outage or anything like that. When the Tennessee book comes in, I read it from cover to cover, you know, just. But you have people that don't want to read, and they're going to look at those and lay them over on the coffee table. So it depends on what generation you're wanting in there, because you're going to be able to reach one certain generation by Facebook, by social media, to where even both of my boys, they'll look at something and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to read that. They don't have to. Oh, sure, they'll read the text. Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. And then you have the older that they're like, no, we don't have a computer. They don't even have computers. But it depends on what, you know, who do you want in there? Who do you want on that board? I believe, it's either going to be, through social media, unless you do all of the above. So. And I think a lot of it is person to person.
I think a lot of what Ryan said with the grassroots effort is really important and something that definitely needs to be, talked about a little more. From my alignment to whenever we pay our check, I mean, they just say, hey, thanks, and then we're out, But I feel like if they could maybe inform us a little more, hey, by the way, we're having this going on next month or whatever, give us like a little flyer on it, that'd be great. But, I mean, that can depend on place to place, person to person, and moment to moment. But I think a broad marketing approach for social media, online, standard billboards, things like that, are very important. And as well as doing things that could be like coming to a high school and giving a seminar, which I know you guys, I think, mostly do all of that already. I think just educating and making sure that it's always in our mindset. To make sure that we know, hey, this information exists, and we know where to go to get it. So,
I think anything that gets your attention, and especially those personal contacts, I'm going to tell a little quick story here, just a second. Last night I met Todd Blacker back there. Todd didn't know, and I didn't know who he was exactly until he told me who he was. And in 1945,
I'm not that old.
Not you, son. In 1945, the prettiest little girl you have ever seen in your life walked into my classroom and got our attention. Her name was Sue Whitaker, and she was Todd's mother. I was madly in love, and I had never looked at a girl before. They were enemies, And that got my attention. That's a little different type of story and everything, but I was so glad to meet him. Seeing him, he brought me a picture of her, and she and her mother looked like a movie star. They were very wealthy then. And, we had our knees out of our blue jeans and everything else, and this beautiful little girl that had beautiful little brown shoes that came in there with ring that started on her back. So, but the point is, that got my attention. And if you can ever figure this out, what gets someone's attention on this, and I do think it's the personal contact that will get your attention. So there are means out there to get this done.
I'm very curious, Todd, given your history of very attractive predecessors, what exactly happened to you?
His dad was a great friend of mine.
Any other questions from
I didn't
from
know it.
How did you feel about veto, the 10 seconds, 15 seconds?
I think from a video marketing for what we're doing for social media and for Facebook and Instagram and things like that, video marketing is huge. Someone will retention on a video is exponentially larger than someone looking at an image or reading text. Even more, like it's like triple. Like the engagement we get, like we post a post on, let's say lifespan health for an image post, it could get anywhere from 110 reach to 300, depending on if it goes viral or somebody shares it. Now, if we post just a video by itself, that alone, organic reach, could get 3 times that without any money on top of it. You know, once we put money on top of it, I mean, you can get 3,000 like overnight. I think video marketing, especially with Facebook and all of them trying to push video marketing into the forefront, obviously competing against somebody like YouTube, is incredibly important. And I think using like search engine optimization with YouTube, making sure whenever someone searches like TVA or electric company in their area, that a video about that area can pop up on their Google search. I think that's incredibly important, and it's very viable for marketing. Like software?
Yeah, like access to it, or maybe you don't have
software. I mean, for like video editing software, it would be like, you know, the Adobe suite is everything you would need. But that's just from a basic standpoint. But of course, I mean, that would be require, you know, cameras, equipment, all that kind of stuff. But the investment of that would be, you know, anywhere from, I would say, $3,000 to $4,000 starting. And then from there, then you can scale to infinity. But the marketing, incentive and prospect of video marketing for TVA or anything like that is incredibly important. I think that would be the best route to go for me. That's someone who's like currently in that field, like making sure that, hey, pushing that towards clients. Hey, by the way, we do social media marketing for you guys. We do text marketing. We do billboards. We do posters. But video marketing gets the most reach overall. You know that we know by the numbers that we can get. I think that's awesome.
I have not, and not aware.
I don't know. I think I want to say the we're aware of it, but I don't think we've ever used any of that. So
we recently built an office for our business, and I believe we use the search protection plan, which we love because we're all on computers. We have a big server in the back of our office that we need to make sure is working and doesn't short out on us. So I think that's very important. I think it's very valuable, and I like that.
I think before most of you were born, in the 60s, when we got married, built our house, we got a rebate on each air conditioner, had wind air conditioners in initially. Of course, I know they had central profit. We had a window, you know, like $30 for each one of them. And the washer and dryer, over the years, we've gotten several rebates now, not from Duck River, but I'm talking about from TDA. And so I'm not aware of any that you have right now. I probably have missed a lot of opportunities to get a few rebates, but I think that they work and they help people, especially people who are struggling.
The meeting versus festival vernacular, that may be, I've gathering, whatever you want to call it. But I think the part of it is just letting people know that it's something that they need to be at, something for them, and not when I see annual whatever of the board with my electric co-op, I think that that doesn't apply to me.
I agree with that.
I think having like an annual conference, annual expo, something like that, because a meeting just sounds like a bunch, you know, a little bit boring. And what you're describing is not boring at all. I think it's the opposite of that.
Free hot dogs.
Yeah, free hot dogs. But I think expo, conference, something like that where it's like more of a, hey, this is a conference, hey, we're coming together and talking about this openly. I think that's a little bit better. Because meeting sounds like a behind closed doors type of situation, which it's not, you know.
You might use an approach like first 2 hours, or maybe first hour is going to be for administration purposes. We'd like for you to be there between 9 and 11. We're going to brief the board, I mean the personnel in the community, on what the board is doing today and the topics. You know, kind of like they do on TV, when the next hour we're going to talk to you about this, or we're going to talk, you hang on until it comes on. So, and then if you want to stay for the regular board meeting, then make that an additional part. At least the people that come would be more likely to stay, and they would have a reason to come, and they would have a reason to stay if they were interested in a particular topic. So, again, it gets back to marketing, yes, sir, just like you said back there, and how you put it out there. But I would be more interested in the overview first to see if there's anything that I wanted to stay in. Listen to, you know, as far as the whole board is concerned, but it can be very boring and dry, except for those that are interested in kilowatts and all these other terms you use.
I know I've got more questions I'd like to ask, and I'm sure you guys do as well, but Todd's giving me the stink eye, so I'm going to kind of wrap this up. Thank you all so, so very much. I feel like this has been productive, and I hope that you will, after this is over, come shake your hands and tell them thank you for taking the time to come be with us today. And please give them a round of applause.
We should give them a round of applause. I have had the best time here.
Excellent. I think we got a break next. Is that right, Todd?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll reconvene. In a minute and 50 seconds. 10:30. 10:30. Very good.
Oh, it's a mic.
Are we set? Well, I kept hearing it.